Our text for preaching today comes from the book of Exodus, the 16th chapter. It's a story about the miracle of food. It's a longish story, so I'm going to read selected verses, but from Exodus 16, I invite you to listen for God's living word to you today. The whole congregation of the Israelites complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. The Israelites said to them, "If only we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt when we sat by the flesh pots and ate our fill of bread. For you have brought us into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." Then the Lord said to Moses, "I am going to rain bread from heaven for you, and each day the people shall go out and gather enough for that day." So Moses and Aaron said to all the Israelites, "In the evening you shall know that it was the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt, and in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your complaining against the Lord. For what are we that you complain against us?" Then Moses said to Aaron, "Say to the whole congregation of the Israelites, 'Draw near to the Lord, for he has heard your complaining.'" And as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the Israelites, they looked toward the wilderness, and the glory of the Lord appeared in a cloud. The Lord spoke to Moses and said, "I have heard the complaining of the Israelites. Say to them, 'At twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall have your fill of bread. Then you shall know that I am the Lord your God.' In the evening, quails came up and covered the camp, and in the morning there was a layer of dew all around the camp. When the layer of dew lifted, there on the surface of the wilderness was a fine, flaky substance, as fine as frost on the ground. When the Israelites saw it, they said to one another, 'What is it?' For they did not know what it was. Moses said to them, 'It is the bread the Lord has given you to eat.'" The word of God for the people of God. Exodus is arguably the most important book in the Hebrew Bible. Genesis gives us the primordial stories of the forefathers and foremothers of Israel and the birth of the Jewish faith. The remaining books of the law and the Psalms and the prophets all naturally have their own value and purpose. But Exodus gives us the story of the birth of the Hebrew people themselves. And even though his name is not included in the traditional litany of Israel's patriarchs with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Moses towers over the leaders, all the leaders of the Hebrew people, because he is the one who brought a band of slaves out from Pharaoh's Egypt. And under his leadership, that band of slaves goes on to become a nation unto themselves, the people of Israel, a people with a distinct identity and culture and faith even to this day. I think even a Christian preacher could argue that Exodus is the most important book in the Bible itself, the Bible as a whole, because without Exodus there is no Matthew, no Mark, no Luke, no John. Indeed, on this special Sunday, this World Communion Sunday, when we share this sacred meal with our Christian sisters and brothers from Alaska and Arizona to Zambia, from Alabama and Asheville to Zimbabwe, I am reminded that the roots of this meal go all the way back to the Exodus story. For the final meal Jesus shared with his disciples was not what we have come to know as the Last Supper. It was a Passover meal, celebrating the escape from Egypt and the liberation from the mud pits of Pharaoh. So you could say that Exodus is the keystone in the arc of salvation history, with all of primordial history on one side and all of biblical history on the other. Which is why the question of how we read this book and understand its powerful stories matters so much. It's foundational. And that, in turn, is why I believe Walter Brueggemann was chosen to be their main interpreter of these stories, because he's simply the best in the business. In his masterful commentary on Exodus, Brueggemann divides the book into six main sections. Section one he calls the narrative of liberation. This runs from chapter 1 through chapter 15, 21. the story of the rise of Moses and the actual exodus from Egypt. The second chapter, second section rather, runs from chapter 15:22 through 18:27, a stretch that contains our text for today, the story of manna in the wilderness. Brueggemann's title for this section is the Lord among us or not? When I read this phrase earlier this week, my heart clenched. Just a few minutes earlier, I'd watched a clip of the Puerto Rican pop star Ricky Martin making an appeal on the Ellen Show on behalf of the people of his homeland. "There's no clean water," he said. "There's no electricity, no food, no medicine, no diesel fuel to run the generators for the hospitals, generators that keep the medicines cool, the medicines that keep the sick and vulnerable people alive." So I suspect the people of Puerto Rico, even today, might still be asking this same question: is the Lord among us or not? It's a hard question, an unsettling one, because it calls God's providence and God's faithfulness into question. But out of respect for the people of Puerto Rico and Florida and Houston and Mexico, I think we too must ask it today. And it won't do to paper over it with glib platitudes and theological cliches. Is the Lord among us or not? Perhaps I'm sympathetic to the question because I myself have asked it at different points in my life, as I'm sure you have in yours, at different points in your life. I first asked it when I was just a boy and my family lost everything but our lives in a devastating flood. Is the Lord among the people of Rapid City or not? I asked in my little 11-year-old way, because it doesn't feel that way or look that way or smell that way. Smelled like a flood. I experienced it again when I was 19 and I went to Haiti and was stunned to discover that thousands of Haitians do not have access to adequate food to meet their daily needs. And many thousands more, perhaps millions more, don't have enough money to buy it even if the food were available. Is the Lord among the people of Haiti or not? Because it doesn't feel that way. Ricky Martin pointed out that in Puerto Rico, some people were starting to get very aggressive because they were hungry. Moses got a taste of that for himself. Yes, life under Pharaoh's whip was unpleasant, even brutal, for the Hebrew people. And yes, they have now been delivered from that life, from the lash of that whip. But at least in Egypt, they had food. And sure, maybe the food was cynical. Their Egyptian overlords could have starved the Hebrews. But they fed their slaves instead because they needed the slaves' labor to build their cities, to erect the great monuments to Pharaoh's vanity. So it was poisonous food in a way, for it didn't just feed their bodies, it fed their slavery and their servitude. Still, every night, when they laid down on their mats, they went to sleep having eaten at least something. Now, here they are in the wilderness. There's no water, there's no food, no medicine, no shelter, no protection from the elements, not for the sick and vulnerable, not for anyone. For the newly liberated slaves, wilderness is not a place of spiritual renewal, as it often is for us. It's not a place to go to get away from city traffic and to commune with nature instead of answering your stupid cell phone. For the Hebrews, wilderness is a place fraught with high anxiety. It's a place of acute frustration, a place of hunger. And add all of those things together, and it's also a place of anger. And so, as we have all done from time to time, the Hebrews needed a target, a scapegoat for their anger, someone to blame for their circumstances, someone at whom to to vent their frustration, and they found that person in Moses and in his brother Aaron. As the text puts it, the whole congregation of the Israelites complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. The Israelites said to them, "If only we had died at the hands of the Lord in the land of Egypt when we sat by the flesh pots and ate our fill of bread, for you have brought us out to this wilderness to kill the whole assembly with hunger. Is the Lord among us or not? Because it doesn't feel that way." The people's complaint with Moses was not fair, of course. It was God who heard their cry from the mud pits. It was God who called Moses to confront Pharaoh, and it was God who parted the Red Sea, paving the way for their miraculous escape. It was God who saved them. Moses was just the guy who answered the call. So their anger toward Moses is not fair. It's easy to imagine that he might have been frustrated or hurt by their complaints, as any normal person might be, but it appears that he said nothing to the people and instead took his own complaints to God, for this is the very next thing that happens. Then the Lord said to Moses, "I am going to rain bread from heaven." Yahweh first heard the people's desperate cry and made a way out of bondage when there was no way. Here, again, Yahweh has heard the people's cry and made a way for them to be fed when there was no way. When this mysterious, miraculous food first appears, the people ask, "What is it?" That's actually where we get the word manna. It's basically Hebrew for, "What is it?" It's a name in the form of a question, for the people have never seen the likes of it before. It's literally bread from heaven, which is to say, it's different from the bread they got in Egypt, bread rooted in the politics and economics of Pharaoh's empire, bread whose only value was to keep slaves alive, to do Pharaoh's bidding, and build great pyramids to immortalize his glory, his vanity. But manna is the bread of life, and it's given specifically to them. This is bread for a people in the wilderness, in a wilderness bereft of food, bread given to a people bereft of hope, bread given to a people feeling the stress that comes when your needs are not being met and there's no obvious way to meet them. It's bread given to liberate the people from their anxiety. Is the Lord among us or not? Yes, comes the reply directly from Yahweh, and this bread, this manna, is the proof. Now, fast forward several thousand years, not sure how many exactly. Some of you biblical scholars will tell me afterwards, I hope. And imagine another wilderness scene. Crowds have followed Jesus out to a place where there is no food, no services, no markets, no livestock, no shelter, nothing. It's not a reprise of the Exodus story exactly, because the people are not slaves exactly. But they must not be happy with their life under Caesar, for they have fled their jobs and their ordinary lives to follow this man far out into this barren place in the heat of the day. Sure enough, as the afternoon light begins to fade into evening, the people are getting a little hungry. They're getting a little antsy. And yes, maybe some of them are getting perhaps a little aggressive, maybe more than a little aggressive, the way people get the world over when their stomachs start to growl and there's nothing to fill them. Which in turn means the disciples are getting a little antsy. Maybe they remember how the people got with Moses, cranky and upset, like adult two-year-olds. Which wouldn't be so bad, except the disciples are currently surrounded by 5,000 of them. And these people, like the ancient Hebrews before them, well, maybe they might need a target for their anger. And that target might be the disciples. "Is the Lord among us or not?" they whisper among themselves. They're about to find out. They come to Jesus and encourage him to send the crowd away, for they've rustled up all the food they can find. It comes to a grand total, 5 loaves, 2 fish. It's a pitiful amount, really. Not even enough to feed the 12 of them. They have no choice but to trust Jesus to fix this. He's brought the crowd out here to this barren place. Surely now he will send them away into the surrounding towns, but it's a false hope. These little villages can neither feed nor house a crowd of this size. It's a crisis moment, in other words. We didn't read this story today, but do you remember what Jesus said to them, to the disciples, the command he gives them? Do you remember? You give them something to eat. I think that's the answer for Puerto Rico, too. A command that goes out in all directions to people of faith and people of conscience from coast to coast. You give them something to eat. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be fast. A federal official this week described the government's response to the disaster as a, quote, good news story. You may have heard this, but the mayor of San Juan responded with shock and anger rising in her voice. It's not a good news story, not when people are dying needlessly. But even if FEMA is slow to respond, I do think the miracle is on its way. Pop stars and movie stars and Broadway stars and Delta Airlines are all sending airplanes to Puerto Rico to bring in food and water and first responders and medicine and generators. More first responders are now on their way from several major American cities. Dozens of relief agencies, including Presbyterian Disaster Agency, are mobilizing their people and their resources as fast as they can. And I know many of you have given generously to support this effort, and perhaps you will continue to do so. You can do it easily. Just go online. PCUSA, Presbyterian Disaster Assistance. God has heard the cries of the people of Puerto Rico, and so have scores, maybe hundreds for that matter, of rich and famous Americans, and so have millions of the rest of us, all of us ordinary folks, and help is on the way. So then maybe you're wondering how these stories relate to you exactly. After all, we're people of privilege, enormous privilege. We have ready access to clean water and abundant food, access to ample medicine and good health care, good hospitals. All of that is true. But this is also true. You don't have to be an Egyptian slave or a Palestinian peasant or a resident of Haiti or of Puerto Rico to find yourself in the wilderness. You just have to be a person. Because regardless of where you reside, if you live long enough, wilderness will find you. There will be times when you feel desperate or anxious or scared or hungry, when it feels like you do not have access to life's essentials, to love or hope or belonging or forgiveness, and there's no way for you to get them. And so panic and maybe even anger begin to creep into your life and flood your circuits. But this, too, is true. And it is our own good news story. This meal reminds us that God heard the cries of the people way back then, and God will hear their cries now, and maybe that cry is yours. So if you have ever found, or if you ever do find yourself asking, is the Lord among us or not? The answer is yes, and this meal is the proof. Thanks be to God.